Welcome to the Spirit Serengeti. We're your hosts, David Swerniger and Matthew Keener. Stop what you're doing and subscribe to our podcast and leave us an awesome five-star review and follow us at SerengetiSec on Twitter.
We're here to talk more about cybersecurity. Each episode will focus on a specific topic or two of interest to the community. Today, it is a personal favorite of both of ours, risk-based alerting.
And as usual, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are ours and ours alone and do not reflect the views of or opinions of our employers.
David, plus beer, plus table saw equals a high-risk event, just like Emo Phillips. That is a deep cut for any UHF fans out there.
Both of them. All right, so risk-based alerting. So the concept behind risk-based alerting is to use an aggregate score of a series of events relating to a risk item to determine if those events should be looked at as possible incidents.
All right, I don't think we need to say any more. We're done here.
Drop the mic.
That extremely easy to understand definition is all
straightforward concept. Just go forth and make it happen.
So risk-based alerting first came up at Splunk.conf back in 2018. Jim Apgar, who's a staff security architect at Splunk, and Stuart McIntosh, who at the time was working for American Family Insurance, presented a talk called Say Goodbye to Your Big Alert Pipeline and Say Hello to Your New Risk-Based Approach, where they introduced the topic. Stuart McIntosh since then has become a co-founder of Outpost Security, where they are actually pretty heavily cyber evangelizing the new risk-based alerting thing.
Yeah, and produce their own premium Splunk app, surprisingly enough.
Premium.
Yeah, that means you got to pay.
Or pay for my stuff. I grew up in the late 90s. It was LimeWire for everything. Where's my LimeWire for RBA?
Not Napster.
Napster. Well, Napster was filled with malware pretty quickly. Then you had to move on. You had to try and stay ahead of the malware. There'd be like good quality on each of the file sharing networks for just a couple of months, and then everything you downloaded was just malicious. You have to move on to the next one.
Man, they just ruined a free thing. Imagine that.
Crazy. So then next year in .conf 2019, there were four talks. It was Jimmy, I wrote it down somewhere later in here. Four talks. We had, oh my God. All right. I didn't write his name down anywhere. I could have sworn I did.
No, you Anyways, did. It's in there. I just don't know where Whatever. It's at.
Yeah, I don't know either. There were four talks. There was Haley Mills, Jim Apgar and Stuart McIntosh did one. Brian something from Publix did one. Jimmy something from Texas Instruments did one. So definitely seeing some expansion. Splunk 2020, I think there were another four talks, and they created a free app rather than the premium app from Outpost Security that was released on GitHub that you could download and install into your Splunk. And finally, this year at .conf 2021, they announced that RBA is now a full-time part of Splunk Enterprise Security. So Splunk is really leaning hard on this RBA thing. It's grown pretty quickly over the last several years, and there's a number of large companies using it and some MSSPs. And like I said, is now an official part of Splunk as well. And everywhere you went in .conf, you could hear them talking about risk-based alerting.
Yeah, because it's awesome.
So far, yeah, it seems pretty awesome so far.
Yeah, and you could probably do this with another SIM other than Splunk. I mean, it's been over 10 years since I've used ArcSight, so I can't remember exactly how you would implement it in there. But this is not strictly a concept that you must use Splunk for. Yeah. The ideas here, I think, are sound, and there are probably ways to implement it in whichever SIM you're currently using. So don't think if you don't have Splunk that this is not even relevant for you.
That's fair. Yeah, I don't know if ArcSight has summary indexing in kind of the same way that Splunk does, but it wouldn't surprise me if you could. So why is RBA so important? Well, this is because the paradigm of alerting as it has existed for the last 40 years or so is faulty by default. For the old alerting paradigm to work, you need to expect people to do a couple things correctly. Number one, you have to correctly tune each alert so it's right in the sweet spot of false positive versus false negative. Most SOCs I've heard of tend to go one direction or the other. I spoke with a former employee of mine that works at a pretty big SOC for a very large financial company. And he was telling me they only get 8 alerts per shift, usually on average. And they are expected to spend an hour investigating each alert and really deep dive into it. On the other hand, I've worked in SOCs where, you know, you get 10 minutes max to cover an alert and you've got to sprint through the whole day, just constantly burning through alerts. Where I'm not going to call them out by name, but I've had leadership tell me we don't turn off alerts here. We monitor everything. That is a absolutely terrible mindset to take and will guarantee you're going to miss something. That's how Target got breached. They had too many alerts and they didn't review all of them.
What this also supposes is that that one individual alert is going to be the key to indicating that something terrible is happening.
Yeah. Yeah. And every and other
it's going to be clear that that's terrible.
Yeah,
which is virtually never the case.
Yeah, it's always multiple alerts that have to be combined. Second thing you have to do correctly, you have to correctly decide which alerts are worth creating. And as example, I have a number of them here. Proxy blocks. If someone is being blocked going outside of your proxy, it can mean any number of things. It can mean, for example, that you're blocking a software package that you don't want people downloading. It can mean that somebody's trying to go to an inappropriate website for work. It can mean that malware is trying to reach out. It can mean a whole number of things. And you probably don't want to have your analyst looking at every single proxy block. That sounds like a nightmare. PS exec usage. There's plenty of legitimate uses for PS exec. You don't want to alert every time somebody uses PS exec. RDP login from a new location. Now, you may want to alert every time you get an RDP login from a new external location. I can see that. But then on the other hand, you may have remote techs that are constantly traveling to different companies' work sites, and then they're logging in from the local guest network or something, hopefully over the VPN. But, you know, blocked malware detections. If you're in a really large company, you may have thousands of blocked malware detections every day. Logins from geographically improbable IP addresses. If you're using a VPN and you have a geographically dispersed workforce, especially if you don't force users to use your company VPN and they're just using any old VPN, you will see this trigger all the time. All of these are alerts that could indicate that an attacker's in the environment, but frequently you don't alert on them because they just fire too often. And the final main issue with a previous alerting paradigm is you have to match the alert volume to your analyst time. And depending on the way you look at it, some people look at it where, oh, well, we have thousands of alerts. We have to review all of them. We have to get a whole bunch of analysts, which is pretty rare because it's hard to make the business case to, you know, hire 20, 30, 40 analysts to review all those alerts. Instead, what you usually do is you have to make the business case to hire as many analysts as possible. And then you have a certain amount of time. You've got, you know, 8 analysts and they're working 40 hours a week and they can review an alert every 10 or 15 minutes. That gives you a pretty finite cap on how many alerts you can review, which is exactly what happened to Target. They had analysts, they could only review so many alerts, and then the alerts above and beyond that might as well have not existed. Nobody looked at them.
Yeah. And you also have, say, you know, every time you buy a new tool or you get a new log source in your log management or your SIM, that's going to increase the volume of alerts.
Yeah.
So you can't just have, say, well, it's going to be 10 alerts per analyst. And every time we get 10 new alerts, we're going to hire a new analyst. It just doesn't scale.
No, it really doesn't. Yeah. Especially if you're a company that brings in companies by accretion or by acquisition, you buy a new company, it's got 5,000 new employees. Now we have to hire 5 new analysts or 4 new analysts or whatever your ratio is. It does not scale linearly. So having separate alerts for events also causes correlation problems. Each alert represents a point in time item that in order to build up the story of a compromise, the analyst needs to combine. And as David mentioned before, if you have, you know, let's say you have a blocked proxy where the attacker tried to exfiltrate data, you have the PS exec usage where they were trying to pivot between systems, you have the RDP login where they first logged in, but each of those is 3 separate alerts. And depending on when they came in, they may go to 3 separate analysts who look at each of them alone and say, oh, well, that's not that suspicious. And they close each one as a false positive.
Well, not only that, but they may occur over multiple days or multiple shifts.
Yeah.
So they don't even, you know, by the time the PS exec event is seen, that proxy block event has already been closed out for 24 hours or more.
Yeah. Yep. And unfortunately, this doesn't fix the fundamental problem with SIM and data quality. But hey, we got to start somewhere. This is where we're working on fixing alerts right now. We're not fixing SIM.
Well, you have to work on what you can control.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how this works, or the idea behind it, is it starts with a risk event. So a risk event is very much like those individual alerts we were talking about earlier, which everyone is dealing with right now. But they are designed and structured a bit differently in order to be used again later. So the original risk event will be scored based on generally three different areas. The impact, you know, whether it was blocked or allowed versus, you know, whether it's happens all the time or it's a rare event. The confidence of the alert, you know, how confident you are that this is a true positive. And then a modifier, which is typically based on risk objects. You know, is this a high priority server? Was this alert, or did this alert involve an executive or a domain administrator? Did this event involve access to sensitive data? So you build your risk event with these and score based on these, basically these three types of information. So for example, the severity of the alert may provide the base score, and then the fidelity of this alert provides a multiplier which bumps that score up. And then the criticality of the asset then bumps up the score again to increase the likelihood that that's going to be reviewed. And then once you have all those pieces, you put those, you add additional information to them, you enrich them to include information in the context of things like which part or which MITRE attack technique or tactic was involved in the event, or does this event fall under, where does it fall in the Lockheed Martin kill chain, the criticality of the employee. And then you structure that alert in a particular way that when it's put into the risk index, you can use that data to then evaluate it against other datas. And a really good source of information on that structure and everything is Haley Mills' talk from .conf 2019, where she really outlines exactly what that should look like. And of course, this is not anything that's set in stone as well, that, you know, because that's the way Haley did it at Schwab means that that's the way you should do it in your organization. But it does give you a good framework, a good place to start with that.
And that's kind of where I'm not sure how this works in other SIMs, because, you know, creating alerts is pretty standardized between all SIMs. You can do it in all of them. But the way the risk events here are, when you create the risk event with your regular search, you put the risk event into a summary index in Splunk. And what that provides in Splunk is the ability to search over really long periods of time because you're only searching that summary index. Whereas if you tried to do these kinds of correlations normally, where you're searching across multiple different types of logic over multiple, you know, a month worth of data over multiple different source types, like that search would never finish. So what you're doing is you're doing little bite-sized searches and you're saving the interesting stuff into a summary index. And then you're doing the longer search over the summary index. I don't know how that maps to other SIMs.
Well, I think, Splunk seems to be uniquely designed for that, but I can't say that that's, like I said, ArcSight's the last SIM that I used before Splunk, and that's been a long time. But I think you could get inventive with the SIM, with other SIMs on how to do this, because imagine that maybe what you do is you create these risk events, and if you don't have the capability of putting in a summary index, maybe you're able to give it a certain tag. And then you have other events, other alerts that look across all your existing alerts for that tag and then do that work there maybe, or something like that.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that makes sense to do the tagging.
So I think there, if you understand the concept, I think you can, and understand the way that your SIM function, you'll be able to make this work wherever you're currently working at. And it's also possible that maybe what you have to do is get a little bit creative in that maybe your SIM creates these risk events and exports them into a database, which then you use some scripts to run against or something like that. I'm not saying that's efficient or anything like that, or does not meet have some challenges, but I think this is almost one of those scenarios, I think, where there's a will, there's a way to do it.
Probably.
But like Matt was saying, what happens with these risk events is you put them into a summary index called a risk index, which then, you know, your typical nodal events in Splunk are currently used to go against all the data within all the indexes within Splunk typically. But what you want to do with your new nodal events, or what you're going to call risk incidents, is only look at that risk summary index instead. And these summary incident rules for alerts can be created in a number of different ways, looking at different parts of those risk events that you created. You know, you can set a threshold that simply looks at that risk score that was built up in those events or built up by those events. So the risk score is, let's say you have a risk event that involved box A, and whatever that risk score, that risk event scored, maybe it said that box A gets 20 points of risk because of that event. And then 2 hours later, another event occurs also involving box A, and that adds another 30 risk points. So at some point, all these risk events may build up with that risk object of box A, where the risk score for box A tips a threshold that you have set of 100, 200, or what have you. And then that event is what gets bubbled up to your notable event dashboard to say, hey, you need to look at box A because of all these risk events that are in here.
And the second way you can create a risk object is you can use that enrichment that you added. If you gave it MITRE tactics or techniques, or maybe the Lockheed Martin kill chain categories, you can then sound an alert when a asset or identity has risk events from more than one tactic. And you can do that horizontally or vertically. And what I mean by that is you can say, you know, if it has at least one event from reconnaissance and at least one event from command and control, and at least one event from exploitation or something like that, where, you know, if it has greater than three tactics, or you can even do it vertically. That probably doesn't work so well for the exploitation, but it might work pretty well for the post-exploitation stuff, lateral movement and things like that. Things like, you know, suspicious tools that are used on the system. Like if it uses PSExec, if it's one category for gathering information, I'm getting into too many details.
It's kind of like, you know, do you do it across multiple tactics, which are the columns, or multiple techniques, which are the entries within the columns?
Right. Yep.
And the same thing is for the Lockheed Martin kill chain, you know, looking at the seven steps in there, are there multiple instances of those, is there one for each step, or is there multiple of any one step? Correct me if I'm wrong, Matt, but you should be able to also build an event that says, do you see them in sequential order from the kill chain? You know, are you seeing, you know, an event from kill chain one, or step one, two, and then a step three, and then a step five, or That's something like that, to see that they're would... moving from initial access to actions on target.
You'd probably want to make sure that your context that you're adding to the alert has some way of sorting it that way. Although I guess you could probably hard code that into the Splunk search. But yeah, there's probably some way of looking, did it, you know, occur in a time-based fashion rather than did just three of these occur without regards to order? Because that would certainly seem like that would have a higher, because yeah, it doesn't add much context if there's a reconnaissance event or a malware exploitation event after the lateral movement. Well, no, actually, no, that would be valuable too. I don't know if it would add more value if they were in order or not.
Well, I'm not saying it would add value, but I'm saying you could look at it and say, did this happen in order? Did it happen out of order?
Yeah, you can probably do something about that, yeah.
Because it's almost, the sky is almost the limit as far as your imagination goes on relationships between different aspects of a risk event on what's important or what indicates potential malicious actions are taking place.
You know, that's funny you mentioned that, because you're talking about that makes me wonder if you could automatically call out named APT groups, like based on which specific MITRE tactics they're using, since you're enriching it with that. Probably not, because you probably couldn't get enough confidence to really say, because they don't use every single tactic on every single intrusion necessarily.
That's true, but you can still use them the same way you're using the MITRE attack techniques that are, you know, because the MITRE framework, they have ATP overlay. So let's say ATP overlay for Fancy Bear targets, you know, these six different techniques within the kill chain. If you have a lookup that has all that stuff mapped out, then you could do that enrichment after the fact and say, you know, these three MITRE techniques were seen and all of them are been related to this ATP. Or something like that. And then that could be flagged or add a point of risk or something like that.
Yeah. Cause I'm thinking of, again, like, where's the difference? Where's the line between when your analysts handle something and when you want to escalate it? And maybe that would give you a way to move it up faster to a higher level analyst real quick to be like, hey, this has all the hallmarks of an APT.
Well, I think what you would do is that just drop onto your dashboard at a higher criticality level. And then you just by process say anything that's a critical risk event automatically goes to a tier three analyst or something like that. And of course, while Splunk has RBA built into it, in the current version of ES, that doesn't mean that this is going to work out of the box. Of course, nothing is that simple. So there are some prerequisites, if you will, to really being able to fully implement this. And this is mainly around your risk object inventory. Do you have a good list of your assets? And do you understand the context of those assets? Do you know which ones are in the DMZ? Do you know which ones have sensitive data in them? And the same kind of thing for your users. Do you have a good list of your users and understand the context of those users? You know, these are domain admins. These are our executive committee. You know, these guys run our HR application or are in our HR department. Those kind of things to figure out what's really important as it relates to those events.
And this is where most companies I've worked for struggle. It doesn't seem like they should struggle, but yet it's because inventory is always listed, has been listed forever as one of the top three things you're supposed to do, right? Is maintain a good software inventory and maintain a good hardware inventory.
Yes. And it's also one of the hardest things to do.
Some of the hardest things to do, and it's never something people focus on. Everybody wants to buy the latest, you know, advanced AI driven security tools. They want to buy their, you know, their wireless. I don't even know. I can't even think. I'm just, nobody ever wants to do the basics.
Well, it's not sexy, number one. Number two, security doesn't see it as their responsibility. They say, well, that's IT's problem.
Yeah.
So they don't really. They aren't responsible for it, so they don't do that much work to get it done. And IT is generally, maybe generally is a bad word to it for, but they can be kind of ambivalent to the importance of that. To say, you know, it's not really that important for me to be ensure that all that is squared away.
No, you're not wrong about that. It's what it comes down to is who cares about it the most, and it's rarely IT that cares about it the most.
Right. It's something that really needs to be pushed from leadership down to say, hey, you two are going to work together to make this happen because this is important. Because it is very labor intensive to get this right. And once you get it right, obviously it's right for about 5 seconds. So you have to be able to get it right and then also have an ongoing methodology to maintain it, to keep it right, or keep it as close to right as you can make it. Obviously, nothing will ever be 100% perfect.
I insist.
I'm sure it'll work out.
That's fair. This is something that came out this year. The original talks all kind of focused around assets and users because those are the two main categories you really care about. But one of the talks this year mentioned, like, you can make pretty much anything a risk object. Files, certificates, bad guys, like anything that is a discrete object. Applications, especially if they're across multiple servers. I imagine for trying to find somebody breaking into one of your applications, like those alerts are going to be spread across databases, web servers, application logs.
That could be processes, could be S3 buckets, Lambda instances.
Yeah.
You know, virtually anything, like you said, any discrete object could be a risk object, which you then can apply a risk score to.
Yeah, that's interesting. Although I'd recommend just starting with assets and identities first.
Right. Yeah, because you don't have to do this overnight.
So the second thing you need, you have to have your risk object settled out. That's really the main prerequisite. Now you need to figure out your searches so that you can build those, you can create those risk events and put them into that summary index. Where do you find your searches? Well, the easiest place to start with is I definitely start with your existing searches. You can convert all those existing alerts that create way too many alerts and drown your analysts. Start with those. Other places you'll want to look. Sigma rules. For those of you that aren't familiar, Sigma is a language for describing SIM searching. And there is a Sigma repository online that has a bunch of basic searches available in Sigma format, which you can then convert to your local SIM. So that's a great place to find those basic rules. You can also look, since we're talking Splunk, security essentials and the content updates in Splunk Enterprise Security. Use a lot of those rules. And then finally, you can go to MITRE ATT&CK and use the attack navigator to build a heat map of what you've already covered versus maybe high priority items that are used frequently by attackers or maybe a particular concern. And then look at each one of those individually, try to use more of a purple teaming mindset there to kind of try and create the logs, figure out how an attacker use the tools an attacker would use to abuse those tactics, and then look through your logs and figure out how to detect them and write content for those. Places that I would not go is I would not go to threat intel sources for this. This is all about basics.
And I think one of the things that you might be able to take advantage of, you know, we generally understand that threat intel is not great for the most part. But because it's not great, this is where you might be able to take something that has, because threat intel has such high numbers, you might be able to use that to your advantage to actually use threat intel to create your risk events and see how many of those things pile up. Because maybe you have a low confidence IOC that you would never want to investigate just because that trip. But maybe if you see that IOC 5 times or 6 times or something, then you could create a risk event for each one of those and then trip a incident alert when you see six IOCs within 24 hours. Because that's one of the things about these searches is that, you know, when you're dealing with typical one-for-one searches, those things are running every hour, every 15 minutes or something like that. And they're only looking at that smaller chunk of time also, maybe the last hour, maybe the last half hour, maybe last 5 hours or something like that. But with the risk incident searches, you can start looking at much broader swaths of time also, because you're only looking back at that summary risk index. So maybe you want to see, you know, has this MITRE ATT&CK framework technique been seen in the last 2 weeks or the last 30 days or something like that, instead of the shorter time frames you're used to dealing with.
Yeah, that the summary index really allows you to search over a much longer period of time for sure. Catch those low and slow attacks.
Yeah, but Matt, isn't RBA just like UBA?
It kind of is. I feel like the Venn diagrams there are fair. There's a lot of overlap. But I think the big difference here is that you're controlling it versus if you're buying a UEBA product, you really have to rely on whatever they have set up as the alerting rules. It's kind of just like we've talked in the past about a lot of IDS systems don't necessarily tell you the logic behind why they alert on something. And they frequently won't give you the context to even tell if it's bad or not. They just tell you, hey, something bad happened in this packet. And here's two lines from the packet for you to make a determination.
Yeah, my experience with UBA also lends its seems also be focused on that short time frame as well, versus the much longer time frames we're talking about you can do with RPA.
Yeah, and there's no one that says you can't have both.
No, I mean you could throw your UBA product or alerts into your risk index.
Yep. So a big question, of course, is now that you've gotten your assets and identity in place, you've started building your first couple searches, you're convinced, you've listened to us, you've gone back and listened to Splunk Talks, and you're like, yes, it's the best thing ever. How are we going to do it? Well, Jimmy, I could have sworn I wrote his name down. Jimmy Mills. Oh, it is. So it's Jimmy Mills and Haley Mills. They're not related, but they have the same last name. That's weird.
Yeah, Mills is so uncommon, though. I'm surprised.
Oh, it is Jimmy Mills. There we go. Yep. So I went to his 2019 talk. So you'll want to check that one out. And he had a timeline for us. For your first five RBA rules, they're the hardest because you don't really know what you're doing. You're trying to figure things out. He suggested your first five rules should be around AV detections, IDS events, proxy blocks, non-HTTPS port traffic through your proxy, and uncategorized traffic through your proxy. And start with those five and really kind of figure out your methodology, start looking at your risk scores, start building a few dashboards for tracking the risk scoring. But at this point, you're not really generating risk events. You're just looking for anomalous behavior and checking it out. Then you build your next 5 to 10 rules and start whitelisting, start tuning the rules a little bit. Once you're at about 20 rules, you can look at maturing your risk scoring. Adding lookups for additional enrichment. And then once you hit about 25 to 30 risk-based rules, he thinks that's when you should develop your first RBA notables to fold into your existing alerting ecosystem and leave them running alongside each other for at least 3 months. He said that was when they started to see their tier one mindset change rather than just looking at individual alerts and start thinking about, you know, the story and the context. And that's when they created the analyst dashboards for their investigations. Haley Mills had a different. She actually said that around 10 RBA alerts, they started catching bad guys. So I think you don't want to just put it off until you have 25 or 30 rules. You're going to have to figure out some way to fold it in a little bit earlier than that, I think. Unless, of course, you've got dedicated people that, you know, that 30 rules only takes you a month to put out. I think that if you're doing this as like a one person who's trying to do this while doing other things, you're going to want to start folding these notables in earlier than that.
Yeah, I don't think the topic of the tier one mindset change can be overstated enough. Because, you know, when you're dealing with one-to-one alerts, it's not too difficult for an analyst to look at a single alert and go, yeah, I've seen that before. That's a false positive. But when you have a risk incident alert that says, hey, these six things or these five things are suspicious, it's much more difficult for a tier one to go, oh, well, those are obviously false positives versus actually having to dig in and truly figure out what's going on with all five of those events.
So there was an additional Splunk talk on using RBA for other areas. There was a talk on using it for insider threats, but I still haven't watched that talk.
Yeah, it's good.
Ah, one day. So I did insert some examples. Not everybody who had a talk on RBA inserted kind of their metrics on how well RBA worked or didn't work, but I found three talks that had good information on how they had RBA working. So the first one, Stuart McIntosh, he was originally in that insurance company. Now he works on Outpost Security. His second year of giving a talk, he mentioned that RBA allowed them to keep staffing flat while monitoring 4 times the use cases. they were seeing 700,000 risk events per week, and they were generating 300 notables per week. Now, I will point out that typically speaking, when we're talking risk events here, those are the things that most people would consider to be alerts beforehand, you know, a malware detection, an IDS event, a login from a suspicious location from Office 365. So if you were trying to keep up with all those alerts individually, that's a flipping nightmare. And then their true positive rate was 60%, which is pretty good. It's not phenomenal, but it's real good. Teresa Chila from Chevron, they saw an 800 times reduction in raw alerts to notables, which actually I kind of want to do the math. Hold on. Because the previous one was 700,000 down to 300. So if we take 300 and we multiply it times 800, we actually get 240,000. So it's in the same ballpark. So that's interesting. An 800 time reduction from risk events to notables. And they were able to monitor 200 more use cases without hiring additional people. So if you want... If you're doing alerts, you're not watching all 700,000 alerts. What you're watching is you're watching a subset of those alerts that you believe are more important. This allows you to monitor all of those alerts. Marcus Boyd at Accenture, he called out that their notable events dropped from 30 to 80% depending on individual use case, and their false positive rate went down from 78% to 48%. So they saw their number of events drop, they saw their false positive rate drop. The analysts were doing better work and more important work rather than just clearing false positives. So now you're convinced, but you need to go convince your boss. Let's give you some ammunition. There are a whole bunch of companies doing this right now. I found at least two MSSPs are doing it. Outpost Security, that one doesn't really count because it was co-founded by Stuart McIntosh, who's big into this. But GuidePoint Security has articles and apparently is doing this.
And of course, there's a lot of large companies that are doing this also. You know, we mentioned Charles Schwab, Accenture, Texas Instruments, Chevron, and Publix.
And there's probably more. These are the ones that let their people go and talk about it at a conference. So unfortunately, right, we don't have a full list.
Well, and quite frankly, after seeing the talks from 2018 and 19, and having it built into Splunk, if you're a Splunk customer that is using Splunk ES, and do not have a plan to move to RBA, I think you're making a huge mistake.
Yeah, I mean, frankly, those numbers from Chevron and the American insurance place, like an 800 time reduction in raw alerts and notables, true positive rates rising, false positive rates decreasing. I get it. Like, it's really the only reason you shouldn't do this is if you can't get a handle on your identity and assets. But again, if you can't get a handle on your identity assets, you've probably got big problems.
Right. Well, like I said, you should at least have a plan to move there. You may not be able to get there today because you need to get your risk objects more solidified.
Yeah.
But at least you have a place to start and start with that. And once you get those things done, then you can actually start working on the implementation of the RBA stuff. So that's it for today. Thanks for listening to the Security Serengeti podcast. Follow us on Twitter @SerengetiSec and download and listen to us on your favorite podcast app.